Hey, Trojan fans, it's time to get into the huddle with the Peristyle Podcast. The Peristyle Podcast is your weekly ticket to USC football and recruiting news. Don't forget, you can download the podcast 24/7 at our website, peristylepodcast.com. And now, here's the host of the Peristyle Podcast, USCFootball.com publisher, Ryan Abraham.
Hello, Trojan fans. Welcome to the Peristyle Podcast on a Wednesday. We're going to talk some Cougar football. USC, Washington State, getting together this weekend, Friday night. Two ranked teams. Would have been college game day had the game been on a Saturday, but it is not. But still, probably the best matchup of the weekend. And we're going to talk, we're going to preview the game. I originally planned to do a question and answer period first and then do a long preview with our buddy Barry Bolton from CougFan.com. But the segment was so good with Barry, I'm going to put this up as its own podcast, and we're going to do another podcast, which finish up all the questions that you guys had sent in after the Cal game. And I think we're going to bring in Chris Trevino, who runs the USC site Fight on 247 on the 247 network, and we're all going to actually be on one site together here very shortly. So we'll do that. I'm going to try to put that up on a Thursday and do that. So if you have any questions or comments for us, podcast@uscfootball.com. That's our email address. Or you can call us at 424-254-9141. You can call or text to that number, 424-254-9141. Remember, keep your questions brief. We can't read really long ones. Make sure they go to that email address, podcast@uscfootball.com. Our buddy Connor, a new intern, is filing all of the questions for us because we get a whole bunch in there. He's helping us out with that. So if you don't send it to that email address, it won't get on the air. Try to direct it to somebody if you want me to answer it, or if you wanted like Keely and Shotgun. They're going to have a show coming up here too. Dan Weber, Harvey Hyde. Let us know who you want to answer the question. Don't say it's for everybody. Don't give us your 10 points of the game. We just can't read all that stuff because we just get too many coming in. We want to get as many people on there as we can, but we can't read three-page emails and stuff that you guys send in. So please try to keep them concise, and we'll go forward with that and do our best to get to as many of the emails and voicemails and texts as we possibly can. But let's jump into our interview. We're going to talk some Trojan and Cougar football. We have Barry Bolton, who's the managing editor for CougFan.com, part of the Scout/247 or whatever we're called network right now. What is up, Barry? How you doing, man?
I'm doing great. How are you, Ryan?
Can't complain. Getting ready for a trip up to Pullman on a Friday night. Which we were talking about before recording. This would have been a really nice Saturday game if the TV schedule and Larry Scott and the Pac-12 would have did their due diligence, we would have probably seen this game on a Saturday and probably had college game day up in Pullman.
Throwing DirecTV to that list as well. I'm blaming everybody anyway. It would have been nice. Obviously, I think college game day would have come this time finally. It would have been nice for the fans, viewing audience. I think it would have been the perfect game for Saturday at 5 p.m. in prime time on ABC, but it was not to be scheduled for a Friday. ESPN certainly loves to be able to fill their inventory, and they're getting an awfully good game with number 16 versus number 5 premier game, as far as I'm concerned, in college football. It should be fun to watch.
Yeah, it should be. It's fun. And so Larry Scott was actually at the USC-Texas game in the Coliseum, and our beat writer Dan Weber asked him about it, like, hey, you know, any regrets? And he's like, no, it's fine. That's just what the TV partners want, so that's what we do. And like, well, you could have had, like, college game day. It could have been. He just was not, like, getting into it. He's like, nah, whatever, it's fine. It's like,
I understand the motivation behind it. I understand that, you know, the contract being what it was, that the TV powers that be want to be able to fill that inventory on Thursday and Friday nights and have the flexibility to also do some Saturday night programming and such. But, boy, it's difficult for the fans. You know, people have families, people have kids. They want to be able to go. And Washington State obviously is not close to a major metropolitan area. If you're going to go that route, you're going to have to pull in people from Spokane, a good couple hours away with traffic. If you go to the west side in Seattle, where the vast majority of Washington State alums are, You've got to make a five-hour trip if you're going by car, at least. It's just a difficult thing to do on a Friday night. Saturday would have certainly been the ideal thing to have that game. I think every Washington State fan would take 11 other games. Well, maybe not the Apple Cup, but maybe 10 other games and trade them out and say, hey, we'll do Friday on this one, but let's have USC and Washington State play on Saturday. But that's what the TV powers want, and that's what the contract is. And until it ends and, you know, they're able to re-up or negotiate further, which I don't think they're going to be able to do, that's the way it's going to be. And so, unfortunately, we've got Washington State and USC on Friday night. But that said, I do think the atmosphere in Martin Stadium, 7:30 p.m., it's going to be pretty electric. It should be a heck of a game.
I mean, it should be two undefeated teams. You know, we got to see – we've seen Washington State the last couple of years be a good team, especially towards the end of the season. But then, you know, early on there would be that kind of hiccup, and this season was not that case. You know, didn't lose to an FCS school. Amazing comeback against Boise State. And here you are, and it's like, hey, this – I mean, Mike Leach and his squad, I mean, this looks like a real team, a real contender in the in a packed Pac-12 North.
Yeah, just when you think that you know what's going to happen with a Mike Leach Washington State team, they go and surprise you. Last 2 years, obviously losing the opener to the FCS team. Eastern, it doesn't bother me as much from last year. The Portland State loss before that was certainly much worse. Eastern was a pretty good football team. They shouldn't have lost, but they still did. But looking ahead to, you know, obviously in the present, you're right. The comeback against Boise State was phenomenal. Boise State hasn't looked as good since then, so that's taken maybe a little bit of the luster off it from some of the national fan perspective. I think you can only play who's on your schedule, though. And Washington State's looked pretty good doing it. The defense especially has been the biggest story. There's issues, as there are on any team, with certain areas and positions. The offensive line for Washington State has kind of been a surprise in a not-so-good way. That said, you know, it's not like they're playing badly. They just aren't playing to the very high expectation level that everybody had for them, given what they had coming back and where they developed to. But Washington State, so far, everything has looked great. They're going to have their first really big, true test this weekend. They certainly haven't played a team with the kind of athleticism, depth, just natural raw talent that USC has. The schedule hasn't turned out that way. I thought Washington State would have already had a pretty good test because I believed Oregon State was going to be one of those rising teams that maybe you beat, but you hate playing them.
Yeah.
You get beat up. They looked to be so on the rise at the end of last year after knocking off Oregon, and they gave Washington State everything they wanted and more, especially in the first half last year. I thought Oregon State was going to be a really tough game and a good test, and Oregon State has been the surprise of the Pac-12 conference in terms of disappointment so far. So along with Montana State, Boise State, which was an incredible game, regardless of what Boise State has done since then. And then, obviously, Nevada is coming back, and Washington State probably played their best game against them defensively. That might not be saying a whole lot, but, boy, I don't know if anybody else could have looked, you know, any better than they did on defense. And the best thing about that game was Washington State kept their foot on the gas the entire 60 minutes. It's human nature. When you get up, it was obvious midway through the first quarter, Washington State was going to win the game and win it easily. A lot of times what we've seen in the past, you know, the foot comes off the gas a little bit and there's some sloppy play here and there. And we saw some of that on the offense in the second half, but the defense all the way through, whether they were going to their second string, the threes, bringing in guys that weren't even expecting to play, towards the end there. The defense was fired up and playing with their hair on fire throughout, which is what, you know, you want to see from a team. And so it's definitely a good start. Washington State was hopeful to get off to a good start with the crazy schedule of five straight home games. Now they've got the big one against USC. So we're going to find out a lot about Washington State, I think, And what we have going forward is the Cougs head off on the road after this.
Yeah, Oregon State is, I thought they'd be good too. And man, they're terrible. Just awful. It's just an awful football team right now. I don't get it either. I thought Gary Anderson, I thought they were going in the right direction the end of last year, like you were saying.
Yeah, I don't really know what's changed either. They look like they had some good people come back. Ryan Nall is a hell of a running back.
He's a stud, yeah.
You know, I know his offense hasn't done it for him, but he certainly hasn't looked like himself either. So it's a mystery.
Yeah. Well, I'm glad you started off talking about the defense, because I think I have people a little come up to me and talk to me about the game, like USC fans, and sometimes they're like, oh, they can't run the ball, or they don't play a lot of defense. I'm like, have you seen the defense play? I mean, that's, I think, you know, scored 3 defensive touchdowns already. You know, when they get multiple turnovers, a really good record. What would you say has kind of changed, I guess, with the Cougar defense, this year from last couple?
I think it's a number of different things. I think one of the biggest things is you've got a unit that has kind of grown up with the defensive coordinator. Alex Grinch is going into his 3rd year. I think it took a little while to get some of those things down. I think it also took a while for some of the guys to grow up. You've got some guys that are, you know, now junior and some 3rd-year sophomores and seniors as well. And so I think they've naturally developed. And then, so far, this brings up a really interesting point. I think we're going to, we might not get the whole book, explanation, but I think we're going to at least get a few chapters on Washington State's defensive recruiting philosophy and how that's going to play out. What is kind of, what's been a little shocking for Cougar fans is, each recruiting class, or the last 2 recruiting classes, Washington State has not taken a prototypically sized nose tackle or defensive tackle. And so for the past 2 years, Cougar fans watching recruiting and saying, what is going on? as you get closer to the day, and then they don't sign one. And we finally were able to talk to Alex Grinch this past February, and the philosophy is we're going to sacrifice size to get speed. We're going to recruit guys up front that are big, long, and rangy, that people would classify maybe as defensive end types. And then we're going to develop them, and some of those guys are going to grow, and they're going to end up being, you know, the 285-pound type guys. And that has worked well this year. It's come to fruition. Washington State is lightning fast. They've looked lightning fast anyway through 4 games. Obviously, we'll have to make a final evaluation at the end of the year. But what this game is really going to be fascinating to me is, because the question is, well, can you play that way if you've got special guys that are real quick and you can beat the teams that are in the lower half of the conference on defense up front doing that. And Washington State, I think, has proven through these first 4 games that's, you know, certainly true. The question now arises, well, what about when you have an uber-athletic, strong, big offensive line, and they're just going to try to run it down your throat? Are you still going to be able to hold up? Are you going to be able to stop them consistently over the course of 4 quarters? And if so, are you going to have to rotate guys in there so that your guys aren't gassed midway through the 3rd and on into the 4th? So this is really going to be interesting to me. I think I saw something where USC's offensive line averages 309 pounds and Washington State's averages the front 3 down linemen 264. So we're going to get a pretty good shot at you know, the size speed debate that's come up here.
Well, we got to talk about Luke Falk, obviously. He was, USC got to see him. I think it was 2014 last time they played in Pullman. It was, Connor Holiday. He got hurt, I think, and Luke Falk came in, if I'm remembering this correctly.
You are?
Yeah, but he, you know, all kinds of records, throws zillions of touchdown passes, 500 yards pass. I mean, I don't know, man. The guy just seems pretty special. Is kind of the same this year as we've seen before? Is he different? Like, what do you think about Luke Falk?
You know, it's really funny. This year, in the first four games, I mean, he had a bad game against Boise State, and he ended up getting hurt and going out for a while, and he was okay to come back in. But at that point, the backup, Tyler Herlinski, had done such a good job and ended up leading the incredible comeback. So, you know, that I'm sure wasn't, Luke Falk was happy about the win, but I'm sure that didn't sit all that great with him. And it's funny because something like that happens and then the media will ask, you know, Leach time after time, you know, what's going on with Falk, what's going on with Falk. And the gist of it was that Leach said, you know, basically it's paralysis by overanalysis. Luke's an incredibly analytic guy. He's always asking questions. He's always looking to get better, always wants to try that. And Leach felt like you're just overanalyzing things too much. You're waiting for something that, you know, you don't need to. The windows are there. Let it fly. Sometimes you just have to go out there and play. And the funny thing is, he's the nation's leading passer, and we're talking about all this. And you know, the fans were criticizing, you know, during the Boise State game and such, and other people are saying, ah, it's time to make a change. And Luke Falk is a fantastic college quarterback who does not get the national attention or local really that he should. He is exceptional at reading a defense. He makes really smart decisions. 2 years ago, everybody's forgotten, in the 9-win season that really helped the Cougars break out of a really difficult stretch for a long time, it was Falk who led some miracle comebacks time after time after time. It was like every game with, you know, minute left, minute and a half, here's Luke Falk down by four, and he leads the team to victory. So Falk is, I think, going to be a fantastic NFL quarterback as well. I'm glad that he came back this last year for Cougar fans, that they get to see this guy. The numbers that he ends up putting up at the end of it, he's probably going to own every meaningful Pac-12, Pac-10, Pac-8 passing record in the 102-year history of the conference. He's a special one. They don't come along very often. And hopefully Cougar fans are just going to enjoy every single minute that they have of watching this guy. He's that good.
And got a pretty good running game to go along with it. There's a few different guys, I think, in the backfield that can be dangerous. Maybe we talk about the running backs for the Cougs.
Yeah, it's an interesting dynamic so far. They have – Jim Mastro's done a fantastic job in developing – it's a group recruiting effort, but Mastro has also done an exceptional job in bringing the guys in that they have and how they've, they really broke out last year. You know, I think, 120 yards rushing per game doesn't sound maybe like a lot, but for Washington State, and especially based on what came before it and in games where you saw Mike Leach running the ball maybe five times, that was the guy who had the most carries in the game. And Washington State broke out last year, and they had three guys, and they kind of went around all of them. This year they actually have four. Any of those four could start. That was the whole storyline throughout the entire fall camp. And since that time, and since the games have started, they've narrowed it down to two, really. The other guys are still there. And I think that we're going to see them at some point. I think that they're going to flash, those. But the two guys that you're seeing the most are Jamal Morrow and James Williams. And James Williams, started off the year like gangbusters and then, maybe wasn't hitting the hole quite the way that Mike Leach wanted. Washington State went away from the run game, as they're prone to do, and then they went back to it. So you never quite know what you're going to see, but Morrow is a guy who is extraordinarily versatile. You can ask him to do anything. He does everything well, from blocking to catching the ball to obviously running it. Williams has improved greatly on his blocking. He's a special runner. He's a guy that can make moves almost at full speed. He's really difficult to bring down. He's got power and speed, and he's slippery. The offensive line is We can talk about that later, I guess, the issue there. But Gerard Wicks is your power back. Haven't seen a whole lot of him yet, except for on special teams. He's doing excellent work there, and he's had a few power runs, and he's got a big touchdown against Boise State. He's actually the fastest guy in a straight line, and you wouldn't think of it to look at him, but he is. But Morrow and Williams, the way that they can spread a defense, the moves they can make out in space, the danger that they have there, they've positioned themselves at the top of the heap so far. Keith Harrington's another guy, really good out in the pattern, really good if he gets out in space a little bit. He also, along with Wicks, I think we're going to hear from both of them. The other thing I should mention is what Mike Leach wants from his running backs doesn't care about rushes. He cares about, he wants his backs to lead the Pac-12 in all-purpose yards. And so that means receiving and rushing, but also maybe a little bit of returns, punts or something like that. But mostly it's rushing and receiving. The most interesting stat to me, or at least one of the most interesting, is through four games, James Williams is the leading receiver at Washington State, and it's not really close. He's got 37 catches in four games, so, you know, nine plus in every in a game. And the next guy is the receiver, probably the Cougs' best go-to target on the outside, Tavares Martin Jr. He's got 26 grabs. So he's got a way to go to catch James Williams. It's going to be very interesting to me over the course of this year if Washington State continues to target James Williams, and if teams, I don't think it's going to happen this weekend, but if teams continue to drop 7 and 8 to try to slow down the passing attack, then I think Falk's just going to hit that dump off every time, and James Williams' receptions are just going to go up and up.
Yeah, he's like third in the country, I think, in receptions as a running back. That's kind of crazy. That's pretty nuts. You know, the offensive line, I guess, maybe underperformed a little bit so far this year. Maybe kind of touch on that a tad.
Yeah, I think, you know, and again, it's not as if they performed badly. They just have not performed up to what is a very high expectation level. I mean, you've got Cody O'Connell, who was not just an All-American last year, but a unanimous All-American. And I don't think Cody would say, and Mike Leach has certainly said that, you know, he needs to do better, but all of them do. You've got some guys that I think the right tackle, Leach has said, has probably played the best overall. That's Cole Madison. And then left tackle, Andre Dillard, who came in as like a 245-pounder, and now he's just that was a fantastic recruiting eye that they had on him. He's developed now. He's, you know, just a beast at, I think he's 305 or something like that, but, you know, he's got a lot of nasty in him. He played the best last week, in Leach's opinion. The center that they've got is a first-year starter in Frederick Maligoa, and I think he has a chance to be really, truly special. He's looked very good to me, and especially just in being a second-year sophomore. He played as a true freshman last year. Cody O'Connell's your left guard, and then at right guard, there was another guy that was expected to be in when people were penciling things in, you know, preseason and fall camp, and fifth-year senior B.J. Salmonson just plain old beat everybody out, and so he's in there at that spot. I think the biggest thing, and you hear it from coaches all the time, and my eyes glaze over every time that, you know, the word comes out, but it's also true, consistency, that's what's been lacking. Sometimes Washington State will look good on the offensive line. Sometimes you see guys down in that second and third level. There was a play last week where Andre Dillard made a gorgeous move. You can't believe he's, you know, as big as he is and he can move like that. And then he got out on a cornerback and drove the cornerback 5 yards onto his wallet. If you can ever see a tackle do that to a cornerback, that's something that you should just, you know, make a loop of and put it on your computer and watch 24/7. So you've seen some of that, but then there's been other times, and I alluded to it earlier when I mentioned that, you know, teams trying to drop 7 and 8 in order to try and fill up that zone that Falk's trying to hit on the pass plays and such. So they're rushing 4 or they're rushing 3, and those 4 or even sometimes those 3 are getting and putting pressure on Falk much, much sooner than they should. If you've got 5 guys blocking 4 or 3, and especially if you're said to be one of the better offensive lines by Pro Football Focus or whoever out there, you should be able to give Luke Falk enough time to make himself a sandwich back there if he wants before he throws. And that hasn't been the case. It hasn't been consistent enough. And now you've got USC, and based on what I've seen, and especially in the Texas game, they're going to come after him. You're going to try to just go ahead and take away what Washington State does best and throw in the ball. And if Luke Falk doesn't have enough time, and if he also doesn't make better decisions at times and get rid of it and recognize that, you know, there's trouble coming and I've got to live to fight another day, and take a bad sack, then, you know, it's going to be a tough slog for Washington State on Friday night. USC is going to, some people think that USC's defensive pass rush against that offensive line, based on how they performed, is going to be a win-win for USC. Washington State's going to have to play much better than they have up front on the O-line, and they're going to have to, you know, really start living up to their potential and you know, win some battles here when the Cougs take on the Trojans on Friday.
Yeah, USC got a lot of success rushing three or four guys against Cal and got a lot of pressure and forced a bunch of turnovers. So, you don't want to be able to give up. You don't want to let, you know, allow them to create pressure with just four guys and dropping guys back into coverage. So, that'll certainly
be key. These are teams that are not close to USC in talent level that have done that. And so then the natural question to ask is, well, if these teams are doing it with 3 and 4, what's going to happen when 3 and 4 come from SC?
Yeah. It'll be definitely one to watch. I want to watch the line play. I know we're going to let you go, but one last thing just on special teams, Barry. Eric Powell's a good kicker. I know he's one of the career leaders in field goals for Washington State. But kind of in general, how has Washington State special teams performed so far this year?
They performed very good. Powell had some problems at the start of last year. Fought through that and nailed 9 of his last 10. This year he had a great clutch kick from a really bad angle to keep the Boise State game going. He's done excellent on, they've got 3 different guys that they put out there on kickoffs and all of them done well. The most amazing thing to me, first of all, I should say that the return units have not busted a big one off. They haven't been bad, but they haven't been great either on punt return or kick return. I think one's coming. Last year was the first time in a long time that Washington State had run back a punt return and a kickoff return for score. Haven't seen somebody break off a big one. Well, there was one, but it was called back from penalty. One of the more amazing things to me on the special teams is the punt coverage and just the coverage units in general. Washington State's done an excellent job on both kickoff and punt coverage. And in the past, recent past as well, that those were the things that killed Washington State. There was a season that they gave up 4 returns for score. And I think after the 3rd one is when they fired the special teams coach and brought in a guy named Eric Mealy, who is a fantastic special teams coach. He's proven to be an outstanding recruiter as well. He's done some really good work. His punt team this year, I believe they only had to punt 13 times. Of those 13, they've only allowed 6 returns because they've done a great job with the rugby-style punt. And when they punted it normally or high, they've angled. And they haven't given a dangerous return man like the guy at Boise State a chance. And then on the 6 of the 13 that they've returned, that coverage unit has allowed a combined total 5 yards. So far, they've just been exceptional. You're not going to be able to continue that average over the course of the year. But if you can get anywhere within spitting distance of it, especially given the troubles that Washington State had going back, you know, maybe 3 years or so, you could see it start to turn 2 years ago and last year and now this year. And that you can say that for all the special teams as well. They're definitely playing much better. I think Eric Mealy would tell you, well, we still have a ways to go. We still have more improvement. But I think Washington State has a shot to be a top 25 special teams unit this year, ranked in the top 25 if you go and look at some of the rankings like FEI and such. That is pretty exceptional given how bad the Washington State special teams were just 3 years ago.
All right. Barry Bolton, managing editor for CougFan.com. On Twitter, just CougFan.com, right, Barry? Is that the best way?
Yeah, we threw a curveball in at you for that, so yes.
Nice. All right. Very cool. Well, I appreciate you, Barry, coming on, and look forward to seeing you up there. What's the weather supposed to be like? It's supposed to be warm, cold?
You know, unfortunately, for Cougar fans, I think they were all kind of hoping that maybe it'd be a little miserable, a little wet, a little cold. Maybe USC wouldn't really enjoy being up there. But the latest NOAA weather forecast that I saw was, I think, about 66 degrees at kickoff, 10 to 12 mile an hour winds, half overcast sky. It's going to be pleasant.
Okay.
A little too pleasant for Cougar fans.
Well, I did see a picture on Twitter of like crap loads of bugs or something flying around the lights. Did you see that one? That was it looked kind of crazy.
I have not seen that. Oh. Maybe some industrious Cougar fans have taken the weather into their own hands. They're going to make it miserable no matter what for both teams.
It was like really scary looking. I was like, what the heck is that? It just looked like moths or something. I mean, but like millions of them, just like all around the lights of the state on Martin Stadium. But cool. Well, thanks so much. Yeah, we'll see.
I'm going to have to go look at that.
Yeah, go check it out. Thanks so much, Barry, for coming on, and we'll look forward to seeing you up there.
Ryan, it was a pleasure. Thanks for having me on.
All right, anytime. And so that's Barry Bolton. Go check him out on CougFan.com. Thanks for tuning in to the Peristyle Podcast, and we will talk to you next time.
You've been listening to the Peristyle Podcast, presented by USCFootball.com. Be sure to tune in next week for the latest news on Trojan football and recruiting. And don't forget, you can automatically download the podcast directly to your smartphone or tablet for free. Just click the iTunes link on PeristylePodcast.com or search for Peristyle Podcast at the iTunes Music Store.